Hello out there, and welcome back to the GamecockScoop.com podcast, the official podcast of GamecockScoop.com on Rivals. I'm Caleb, joined by Alan. We took a little week off as Alan was traveling to Pittsburgh for the men's tournament, and then very quickly got back in time for the women's game on that. How was that trip, by the way?
There's a lot of construction barrels in West Virginia. That's where I learned on that trip.
Good to know. Good to know. How's the actual drive through West Virginia?
Actually pretty. Like, there's mountains. There's this little stretch of Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia. When you go to get to West Virginia, like, actually, I've had way worse drives than that from that perspective.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. So, yeah, let's start there, actually, with men's basketball. So, after a season that exceeded all expectations, you finish tied for second at the end of the regular season in the SEC. You get bounced in the SEC tournament by Auburn, who you just didn't match up well against, as we kind of saw in both of those matchups throughout the season. And then you ran into a Cousinard against Oregon. I wouldn't say that South Carolina necessarily played their A game either, but felt like the 40 points from Cousinard was really the difference in that NCAA tournament game. And sometimes that happens in March. You just have a March, you just have a guard go crazy. And that's exactly what we saw last week.
Yeah, you let the, I know there's other circumstances there. There's a, he's obviously, he's a former Gamecock. There's whatever there's attached to it. Excuse me. You let the one guy in the building get hot that you just couldn't, if you want to look at it that way. You kind of had some game control. You were up six, like midway through the first half. Cousinard goes down, hits a three, gets a steal, hits a layup, 5 points in like 20 seconds, and then he's off to the races from there. And then he turns around on Central Oregon, lost Saturday, but he turns around and scored 32 against Creighton. He ended up leading all scorers in the men's tournament last weekend in points. He had 72 in two games, and you ran into the wrong guy on the wrong day, which I know doesn't make anybody feel better about it, but that's feels like just what happened.
Now, I think you had a tweet in the second half, because I did feel like there were a couple of times where South Carolina felt like they were going to make a little run and make it interesting again down the stretch. But you had a tweet where I believe it was Michi made a tough three, and then Cousinard came down and made a three right after it to like stop all momentum. And you're like, that's kind of the ball game right there. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how it's been all through the stretch. Every time you felt like you got anything going, he was there to put a stop to it. So I don't think it takes anything away from your season. Obviously, long-term, given the extension you gave to Lamont Parrish, you're going to want to be back there again soon and push it past the first round, especially when you see the Upstate team doing what they're doing so far in the tournament. But overall, I think you're kind of grading on a curve based on where you thought you would be at this point.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the whole thing now, right? You look at it moving forward. Okay, I think it was 97, 98 were the last time South Carolina men made the tournament 2 years in a row, those 2 years. That's the task now. I think Lamont talked about that in his post game on Thursday, is that, okay, now you got to stack seasons. Now you got to sustain stuff. They're going to have to portal again. I think we knew that was a given definitely before yesterday, but especially yesterday, now knowing that Miji Johnson won't be back. That means you're down three of your top four scorers from this team, with Michi gone and Talon Cooper and BJ Mack were already out of eligibility anyway. So you're basically replacing three of your top four scorers, three of your five starters. And that's something Lamont obviously did really well last year. But I think if this year maybe proved anything, it's maybe you look at Arkansas and two straight second weekends of the tournament, and then the third year fell flat. Portaling every year kind of starts over, right? Like, the cycle starts over. You got to get your three or four guys in there you really think can make an impact. But I also would have no reason to doubt Lamont Parrish right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely proven that he can put pieces together. You now have three scholarships open, because you mentioned the guys leaving. Abrima Diba also just entered his name into the portal today. And you have two freshmen coming in the class of 2025.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about needs, guards, and especially ball handling guards for sure. Now that you're losing Michi, Talon, and to less of an extent Deba, but still he was someone who could do that. I think that's kind of priority number one now.
Yeah, I think so too. And you probably want one more big man to be in the rotation. Obviously, BJ Max, tough role to fill, but assuming you get Connemara Boyles back and assuming he does start to develop that step back game that Lamont Paris has mentioned in a few press conferences throughout the year that he has, he just hasn't fully developed yet. Then maybe he plays a little bit more of that tweener role. Josh Gray should be back as far as we know. We'll break down the roster fully here in a couple of weeks as some of this portal movement starts to fully shake out. If you go to GamecocksGroup.com and go to the Insiders Forum, we have a portal thread going where you can look at a couple of the targets that we already know about that Paris is starting to look into and has reached out to. But some more of those names will pop up, and we'll do a full breakdown of what the roster looks like going into the 2024-2025 season after that all, you know, sort of shakes out. But I agree, guard and probably a big man, and then best player available, maybe, assuming that it ends up still being three open scholarships. I think there's some excitement about the 2025 class. Ellis. I can definitely shoot it. We'll see how that translates as a freshman in the SEC. But he's a guy that can kind of pull up from anywhere and make it happen. The Michi thing hurts, but we were talking about it yesterday. You tend to think that he's probably going to try to at least get a shot at the NBA, or I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But
yeah, I think you got to just wait and see there. Like I said, obviously that hurt someone you wanted back. I wasn't fully convinced he was coming back anyway. I had heard he was kind of leaning the NBA route, even if he hadn't made a decision. Still think that might happen. Maybe he gets a bag from a Power 5 school somewhere. I don't know. I mean, as long as he doesn't end up in like the SEC or like at Clemson or something, I don't think you really care, even if he does take his fifth year of eligibility somewhere else.
Yeah, I think
until you run into him in the first round of the tournament next year, like Cousinard, and then, you know, but at least for now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, as that was happening, you're like, man, it'd be nice if he was in Garnet Black right now, scoring 40 points. But I mean, that's the nature of the beast, right? So we'll break down those moves as they happen. But I guess at this point, just like a nice moment to reflect on a season that overachieved. And then maybe came up a little short, shorter in the end than you're hoping. Who you still have left in your bracket, your final four?
Yeah. So had UConn winning the title, that's obviously still in play. I did have Creighton in the final four coming out of that region. So that's still there. I'm trying to remember what my other two were now. It's been such a blur the last week. I think I had Arizona coming out of the West. They're still in. And I thought I had a Final Four get knocked out. That top right-hand quadrant, I don't remember who I picked, but out of who's left, I guess I'd probably go with Houston.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
My Final Four is still intact. Of course, you fill out several brackets, right? But if I'm looking at the one that actually I took the time to really think about and make, and it's the one that I put money on and all that sort of stuff. I have UConn over Houston in the finals, and then I have Purdue and North Carolina as the others. So all ones, pretty basic, and I assume that's not actually going to play out as it is, but so far all the ones have made it to the Sweet 16. Yeah. So we'll see.
I'm very interested in that. Ironically, it was South Carolina's region, but like, all right, Purdue's got the March resume. They're trying to get rid of, shed the label. Tennessee does too with Rick Barnes. Those two are both in the same region. I mean, neither of them might get to the Final Four, but you'd think one of those two, I mean, they might play each other for a spot in the Final Four this weekend.
Yeah, see how that goes. That's what I have, so I hope so.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to the women's side here in just a second, but let's talk baseball because the tone has changed a little bit.
The tone has changed dramatically.
we actually didn't talk about the Ole Miss series on the podcast because that would have been last week. But if you're reading any of this stuff on GamecockScoop.com, neither of us had very many positives to say. It seemed like a lot of the early season bugaboos or whatever that were continuing to crop up, the hitting percentage with runners in scoring position, the amount of strikeouts, all those things were carrying themselves into SEC play. And yeah, South Carolina went 1-for-2 in Oxford, which is a tough place to play. And that's actually part of a larger point that I think we'll bring up here shortly is so far throughout the first two weekends of SEC play across the league, home teams have done a much better job.
Yeah, I think it's 11 out of 14 series the home teams won.
Right. And oftentimes, even if it's the inferior ranked opponent, it's gone on that way. So on that note, South Carolina swept Vanderbilt last weekend. So now they're 4-2 in the SEC. Yeah, right. Now they're 4-2 in the SEC. And the narrative feels completely different. And it was really on the back of flipping a lot of those things that we've been talking about. Some of your clutch hitters came through. I think you like playing in Founders and like hitting home runs in Founders up and down the roster. There was just a lot more long balls throughout the weekend. And I was really impressed with the pitching. Really impressed. On Sunday, you saw Tyler Pitzer make his first career start as a freshman, and he went into 7 innings, was nearly flawless. I think he ended up getting a couple earned runs as he exited, maybe went a couple pitches too long. He was up in the 90s in his first start as a freshman, which is kind of crazy. And then you had Matthew Becker come in and shut the door. Didn't really need it. You were up by a million runs at that point anyway. But I was really impressed just at the top end of what this team can be this weekend. And I think it gives you a little hope going forward for sure.
I'm not going to use the word frustrated because if you're a South Carolina fan, you're obviously ecstatic about how those three games went. But like, are you a little frustrated? Like, it's right there. It can be so good. You saw what the ceiling is. You saw a lineup 1-9 that pitchers don't want to face. You saw your two All-Americans. I mean, Ethan Petrie came up to bat 8 times in the doubleheader Saturday and got on base all 8 times, hit 2 homers. Cole Messina got it going again. You've moved Parker Nolan to the leadoff spot. He had a huge weekend against his old team there, the Vanderbilt transfer. You saw your pitching. Eli Jones took a perfect game to the 7th on, not Friday, I guess, game 1 on Saturday. That was everything you wanted, everything you've been waiting for 6 weeks now. And it kind of is the men's basketball conversation in a smaller perspective. We're talking about stacking seasons for Lamont. Go stack another weekend on it. You got to go on the road again. You get your midweek tonight at home, but you're at Alabama this weekend. That's a quick turnaround. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series because of Easter on Sunday. Go take 2 out of 3. Go stack another weekend, and then maybe we can talk about this for real.
Yeah, you got to road matchup, like you said, at Alabama starting on Thursday this week. And if you play like that, that is a series that you should win, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll see if you can take that show on the road. And if you're going to reach the heights that you want to this season, if you want to be playing for, you want to be hosting another super regional.
That's the key point. Yeah.
Then you're going to have to win some SEC series on the road, and that starts this weekend for sure. That said, I did feel definitely a little encouraged. And baseball is so weird. Like, there is a law of averages thing, which we've talked about a little bit on here. Like, you assumed Ethan Petrie and Cole Messina were not going to be cold
right
for too long, and those bats have started to come around. The question will be, was that lineup change this weekend like their perfect lineup? And now going forward, things are going to look a lot better. Obviously, you're not going to win every game going forward or whatever, but like, is that your ideal lineup? Maybe it just took you a while to find it. And I do think that that's frustrating when it's a team that's mostly the same as it was last year, plus or minus a couple of pieces, that it took this long to find it. But it's not too late if you did.
No, not too late at all. And I think the home point there, you're trying to get home games in June. That's the goal here. You've seen how dangerous this team is at home, and nobody wants to play in Founders. All right, yeah, you can't just win every home series. Even if you're not going to sweep every home series, you can't just rely on that. You're going to have to find a way to go to some other ballparks and win. And on the lineup point, like, I don't know exactly what works about this, but it is right now. You know what I mean? Like, I think I asked Ethan Petrie Saturday, like, what do you like about this new configuration hitting in it? Why is it working? And you just said, well, you know, it's kind of the top four have some power, the bottom three have some speed, and those guys can get on for them. And it was an answer and a non-answer. It was just he just kind of said too, also from, I think it was from another question, like, we just kind of went out there and hit the ball, which doesn't really help. We were trying to write about it, but this offense seems to be back where maybe you thought it would be a month ago. And if it is, even if the pitching, again, you talk about law of averages, regresses a little bit, this is not a team anyone's going to want to face. But again, I need to see a stack weekend. I need to, you know, you need to see it 2-3 weekends in a row.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit in text over the weekend, but it does seem like he hit on his freshman pitchers this year. Yeah, as far as the recruits that he brought in. We mentioned Pitzer, Marlott, how do you say his last name? But
I think it's Marlott.
Yeah, has had a nice start to the season. And that really gives you a little bit more peace of mind if that can continue, because that's been kind of the thing that's gotten you the past couple of years is pitching injuries down the stretch, and then you don't have any depth and you can't finish out the season. So maybe this is a sign that pitching staff's a little bit deeper this year. Before we get to the women's basketball, let's talk a little bit about football and spring practice. Someone on the Instagram I saw asked what happened to Juju.
I can answer that.
Yeah,
one.
Go ahead. Yeah.
He went diving for a pass in a practice and fell on his collarbone. Simple as that. They wanted to get the surgery done now. No reason to push it in spring ball. I said as if he didn't, again, dive for a pass in a spring practice and mess up his collarbone, but that's what happened, and he's out for the spring now, per Shane Beamer today.
Yeah, so thanks for the question. Keeping it real, 0009. And yeah, if anyone's watching and has any questions for us, feel free to shoot them over, and they should show up in our comments, hopefully. If not, I'll see them later, and I'll text you an answer. but anyway, let's, and then as far as other spring notes, we'll talk a lot more about like what the roster is looking like, what things are developing as we get into April, kind of prioritize basketball and baseball here, for good reason, I think. There's a quick recruiting note. Ryan Montgomery, 2024 quarterback. We already had this a few weeks ago on GamecockScoop.com, but he should be in town for the spring game. So, and he's taking an official visit on the 20th of April. So that's good. I have a future cast in for him for South Carolina. I still feel pretty good about that prediction. Georgia and Florida are involved. We'll see. He's supposed to visit those guys too, in the spring, but, as of right now, feeling all right about that. Any other notes as far as just, things that you've picked up, of what's been going on in the spring so far?
I think it dropped today. Kelton Henderson's no longer with the program. That was the wide receiver. I think he was a three-star. Correct me if I'm wrong. Three-star. Yeah. He didn't play it last year. I don't think he played even a snap last year. He redshirted. He's no longer with the program. That's just one of those things where you always talk about, like, there are 89 scholarships going into spring ball. This stuff always works out. That's the kind of stuff we mean when we say it works out. Nick Harbor is involved in spring football, but he's focusing on track. I wrote a story about that last Tuesday. If you want to scroll back through Gamecock Scoop to find that, he's in the meetings. He's going. Beamer just said he's doing football whenever he's not doing track or school, but he is still focusing on track. And I believe he set a new personal best this weekend. So clearly still doing well there. Beamer said he still has his eyes on the 2024 Olympics. I don't know how realistic that is, but it's there, and you can see why. What do you think of the Nick Harbor thing going into his second year? Because I think he kind of fits. It's funny, I was talking about this with Perry McCarty, our film guy, when I saw him in Pittsburgh for a little bit. He's kind of what this receiving room doesn't have in terms of frame and jump ball and things like that, especially with Leggett gone. It feels like it's a room of 5'9 to 11 speed guys. But is Nick Harbor your WR1 right now, I guess is my question?
Let's see if he gets any snaps in the spring game. We haven't seen it yet, right? So there are definitely some things from the film last year that I think he needs to develop. We've talked a little bit about it, but really it's just that coordination and using that frame that you're talking about. He didn't necessarily high point the ball against defenders. So if he can reach his potential, yes. But we knew he was a little bit raw coming in. Yep. Never really played wide receiver in a pure way in high school. He played tight end and defensive end some. And spinning spring doing track, I don't know how much he's able to develop some of those things.
That's the thing, yeah.
Granted, you knew that that's what you're getting when he got here. You knew that he was, yeah, a potential Olympian one day. So I can't blame him. That's a dream of his, and you know, good for him. Go get it. But yeah, that just means there's going to be a lot of work after the season's done to develop that. And it also won't surprise me if they look for another wide receiver or two in the spring portal period. So depends on who they land there, but I agree. They need a couple more big bodies and they need him to step up. I think he has the capacity, I guess, to answer the question. I just don't know if he's going to be ready yet.
Yeah, I think maybe the way I should have phrased that is I personally think you need him just because he is so different to everything else you have in that room. You know what I mean? Like, he's there's not another I'm not saying another Xavier Legette, a guy who might be a first round pick here in a month. You don't have another Legette body type in that room right now, but Harbor is probably the closest.
Yeah, no, he's going to get snaps. It's just, is he ready to actually step up as the alpha? I don't know. we'll have to see. I hope so. That would make that would make things very exciting if he was.
Yeah, I think that's about the spring football notes. I had a couple other injury notes in the story last week, but it seems like other than the Juju news, which we found out about 4 hours ago, there's nothing new on the football front. They're going to keep practicing 3 times a week leading up to April 20th. That's the spring game. So not the week after next, but the week after that is when spring ball will wrap up, and we'll have plenty that week and official visitors and all that stuff on the 20th.
Yeah. I would say those of you that read on GamecockScoop.com or are looking to start, next week we'll really start to ramp up some of the football coverage, but obviously wanted to tie a bow on a great men's basketball season, which we're doing. Speaking of basketball, there's another team
that's not quite done.
Yeah, and great. The women are on to the Sweet 16. Are you leaving for Albany, tomorrow?
Yep.
Right, so they are...
That's definitely a place that exists that you can hold a regional.
Yeah, I don't necessarily understand the appeal there either. There is an airport there, I guess. But anyway, I don't know. Not quite as big of a airport or pool or whatever as Portland, which is the other regional site, but whatever. South Carolina's path to get here, they handle business against Presbyterian, as you might expect, and then just put an absolute shellacking, perfect-ish performance, especially perfect first half performance against North Carolina, who almost beat them in the regular season. So I think that's a little notable just about where the mindset of this team is right now and how dialed in they are. Now they have a matchup against Indiana. Indiana thus far has beaten a number 13 seed Fairfield, which was a pretty good 13 seed. They had only lost one game all year. And a number 5 seed Oklahoma to get to this point.
Yeah, just again, like I always say, to go backwards before we go forwards, I had a reporter at ESPN who was there tell me at halftime Sunday that South Carolina's first half was the best half of basketball they'd ever seen in person. Just running through some of the numbers, they had 13 assists on their last 14 made field goals. They're moving the ball. They held UNC without a made field goal and just 2 points total on free throws for 9 minutes. They were plus 10 in rebounding. They were 80% shooting threes. I don't even know what you would even like if you're the coaching staff. Second half, fine, whatever, garbage time. But from that first half, I don't even know what you would look at if you're Dawn or one of those assistants to, like, nitpick. That was pretty much a perfect 20 minutes of basketball. And this team is the favorite for a reason. And I don't even know what else to say about Sunday other than just it was pretty much perfect.
Yeah. You got the return of Camilla Cardoso.
Yep.
Which was nice to see. Man, yeah, I think you pretty well summed it up, right? Like 13 of the final 14 field goals before halftime. What was the run before halftime?
30-2 run at one point. And then I think by the time it got to the end of the half, it was like the last 43-6, I think, was the run.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're doing great. They're in a good position. What can you tell us about Indiana and, I guess, what to expect in this matchup coming up on Friday?
Yeah, so they're not overly deep. They usually only go 7 or 8, which is where I think South Carolina will have an advantage and eventually pull away in this game. But they do have superstars. Mackenzie Holmes is a forward. She's outrageously good. She scored, I think, 29 in Indiana's second-round game. Kind of fits the profile of that, like, shot-creating forward that's given South Carolina some problems this year. I'm thinking mainly of, like, Tennessee's Rekia Jackson. They've got a starting five they can play with anybody. Like, at their best this year, they played Iowa and beat them by 17. Just blew them out and basically took Caitlin Clark out of that game. And at their worst, they played an Illinois team that's in the NIT and lost by 20. So kind of obviously more volatile than South Carolina, but they have only lost 5 games this year. I expect a close first half. I think you're going to get to a point where South Carolina has 10 players they trust. Indiana has like 6 or 7, and that's about where the game's going to get away in the second half. But this is going to be a tough matchup. This is going to be tough, especially when Indiana starters are on the floor. And I think they're going to have to defend well, especially in this game. Excuse me. Jeez.
Yeah. So I agree with pretty much everything that you said there. If you look at Indiana's path here so far, they played a pretty close game to a decent Oklahoma team in the round of 32, won that one 75-68, but obviously a little bit of a different storyline as far as dominant performances. In the round of 32. South Carolina's path to the Final Four now kind of lies in the state of Indiana, seemingly. So you have Indiana, and then on the other side of the bracket, you have Notre Dame and Oregon State playing each other to see who matches up against the South Carolina-Indiana winner. Obviously, you played Notre Dame to start the season in Paris. Yeah.
Paris.
I almost said Ireland, sure, because I feel like Notre Dame always plays in Ireland, but Paris, and you scored 100 points on them. So, obviously this has been a long time since then, but just a look ahead there.
Notre Dame's down their best big right now, 6'4", Kylie Watson. She got hurt, I think, in the ACC tournament. I think it was their last game of the regular season. She's done for the year. That's a big blow for Notre Dame. Again, they can still give you problems. You saw that in Paris. They had a freshman go off for 30 against you in that game in Hidalgo. But your path to the Final Four is right now Indiana, who has 6 or 7 players they really go with, and a Notre Dame team, probably Notre Dame, who you already beat and doesn't have their best post presence. So as for like a national title, you know, it's still tough. There's still Iowa's out there and Stanford and USC and UCLA, but you're Southern Cal. But I think anything less than getting to the Final Four would be a big disappointment this weekend.
Well, and at this point, I mean, you look at Iowa struggling against
West Virginia last night.
West Virginia, not Colorado. West Virginia. South Carolina has looked like the most dominant team. Stanford struggled, went into overtime against Iowa State. South Carolina has looked like the most dominant team up to this point. The question is, can you ride that momentum for 4 more games?
That's the whole thing. It's the... You know, I kind of keep asking people, and I keep getting about 50-50 answers. That's other people here, national people, whatever, just people I talk to. South Carolina or the field, now that we're into the Sweet 16, like, it's tough. I think a lot of people here are still scarred by what happened last year, but I don't know. It's really hard to pick this team to lose to anybody.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would depend on what sort of odds you give me, but I tend to lean South Carolina there. If they play like they played on Sunday, then easily. But
I mean, that's I don't even think they have to play that well. I think 75% of what they played Sunday, they're winning the national title. You just do that every game.
Yeah, one, it depends on what you run into too, right? Like, you saw a heroic performance last year from Caitlin Clark knock you out. That said, I think you have the firepower should you run into something like that again.
Yeah, you can play a track meet this year the way you couldn't last year.
Yeah, and I think that is the that is the difference. That doesn't mean that you might not have some sweaty palms moments coming up in the next couple of weeks, but
that's my only question really, is what happens when the sweaty palms come. Cause other than LSU, which was a big game, and really, I guess Tennessee at the end where you got the miracle shot in the SEC tournament, you haven't had a sweaty palms moment with your season on the line yet. There's not really any way to simulate that until you're in a close game with 2 minutes left.
Yeah, exactly. So, Alan will be up in Albany this weekend with full coverage.
Send me Albany Rex, somebody, please. If we've got a ranging, roving UConn fan who's been there before up that way or something listening, someone tell me where to eat in Albany, New York, please.
Yeah,
or what to do in Albany, New York.
I say I've been all over New York State, but you and I haven't landed in Albany before. So,
yeah, I'm 99% sure this was set 3 years ago on the assumption that UConn would be great and get a one seed and then get to play a regional. Same reason it's been in like Bridgeport, Connecticut in the past or Springfield, Mass. And then UConn's not as good this year. They get a three seed, they get shipped out to Portland, and the rest of us are stuck in Albany.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to maybe start making adjustments more down south for regionals coming in the future.
You know, I'm not going to say no if they want to toss one to Charleston or Charlotte or Atlanta or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back next week on the GamecockScoop.com podcast to talk about everything that has happened. In the meantime, check us out on GamecockScoop.com. We'll have baseball coverage starting Thursday of South Carolina's trip to Alabama, and full coverage of the women's trip to Albany. Some spring notes here and there as well. Transfer portal notes for men's basketball. That's going to continue to heat up. So stick around. In the meantime, this has been the GamecockScoop.com podcast. We'll see you.